Love, Lust, and Laughter with Dr. Diana Wiley and Billy Sage, Fridays at 6 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Dr. Diana Wiley, and the show is Love, Lust, and Laughter. And my loyal sidekick, Billy Sage, unfortunately can't talk today. He has laryngitis, so I'm going it alone with my friend and my guest, Jamie Waxman. Hello, Jamie.
Hi, Diana. How are you?
Good. And I wanted to tell our listening audience that, you were on this show October the 8th of last year, and I happened to be in the Progressive Radio Network studios because my son lives in New York City, so I actually did the show with you last October from the studios. And anyway, I also know you because we have a mutual friend in Candida Royale. Our friend Candace has been a real inspiration to both of us, but in different ways. Can you share with the audience in what way she's inspired you?
Wow, well, Candida actually, you know, she changed my life, I guess. I met her when I was a radio producer in 2000. Mm-hmm. I was producing for a channel called eyada.com. And
I was on that
guest
show.
On my show,
yeah,
with Bob Berkowitz.
Yeah.
And the show ended in August of 2001, and her birthday was in October. And she had called me up and said, I'd love you to come to my birthday party if you are around. And I did. And there I met her producer, Michele Capozzi.
Mm-hmm.
And through Michele Capozzi, I he brought me on to one of her movies, Stud Hunters. And that began that was the beginning of our friendship. And it's continued ever since.
And she is a fabulous woman. We both love her, and I've been friends with her for about 20 years now. I met her first at a sex therapist educators conference. I think it was Quad S in San Francisco, you know, 20 plus years ago. Anyway, I wanted to let the audience know that you have generously agreed to give away to the first caller your DVD, and it's an award-winning DVD, 101 Positions for Lovers. And, you know, I was looking at my notes, and we actually had a caller last year. We don't always get callers, I suppose, because people are shy. And I think the other reason is that because it's 6 o'clock in New York, around Eastern Standard Time, many people do come back to the show when it's archived by the following Monday, and then they download it. But last year you gave away a copy to Liz, the caller, Getting Off, A Woman's Guide to Masturbation, and we're going to talk about that book and also about you. And you're just quite an amazing young woman.
Oh, thank you.
Jamie, you've been dubbed the next generation of sex educator, and next has three X's the way you've written it on your website, which is very good because it's your XXXX. And so you have a master's in sex education from Widener University, and I heard when we spoke on the phone yesterday that you may be pursuing a PhD as well. Go,
yes,
girl,
I'm
go.
Not sure.
Yeah.
But there's a possibility, yeah.
Yes. So you do lots of workshops, lecturing, you're a sex writer, author, blogger, video host, producer, and director. And, of course, you directed this 101 Positions for Lovers. And so we'll talk a little bit about that. And I, Paul Yohannides has been a guest on the show a couple of times, and he wrote a very nice review for you of that.
Yes, I feel very lucky. Paul is a tough critic, and
yes.
I used real couples in 101 Positions, so that already makes it a unique angle. And these were all people who had to be comfortable, of course, getting naked and demonstrating sexual positions on camera. So that was in and of itself a challenge to, because a lot of adult companies won't work with people who haven't been on camera before.
Mm.
They want to make sure that if they're going to have actors and actresses come in, that they are going to be able to perform.
Understandably.
Sure.
And you took a page from Candida Royale's director's book, because she started her company FAM in 1984, so she's a real pioneer. But she's always used, or at least attempted to use, real couples. And that translates very well on film, doesn't it, Jamie?
Yes. I mean, her couples were porn stars. I don't know if she's really ever used anyone who wasn't in the industry. I know she did.
I guess you're right, yes.
Because even Eyes of Desire, she had some great, there was great chemistry between Mickey and, I will blank on her name for, oh, Missy.
Yeah.
But, and they were married. So it is nice. Although, my first three movies I shot with adult actors, and I still tried to use as many real couples as I could because I thought the chemistry would be better. And my producer pointed out that sometimes the problem with real couples is that if they are in a fight, it is more difficult to get them to act well on set because it's a personal fight.
Yes. And I do lots and lots of marriage counseling in my private practice, and one of the rules is pick your battles, but nevertheless, if you're about to go on camera, and I don't have any couples in my private practice who are going to be doing that, but you don't want to have the residue of, although sometimes people will have a fight and then have great makeup sex. I wonder if any of your couples had that, because physiologically speaking, a lot of the same hormones and heartbeat and all of those things are stirred up.
Absolutely, and I'm sure, I mean, there was one of the couples on my first films that were definitely, they are now divorced. They definitely had a lot of animosity at times for each other, and they did stay together because the sex was hot, and that's what they said, we're together because we have great sex, because I think they fought enough to have a lot of great makeup sex.
Yeah.
But I do think that for the most part, while hot makeup sex is the way to go if you're going to have makeup sex,
yeah.
I also think that if that's how your relationship is fueled, if that's the fire, then you might want to reconsider how you learn to communicate.
Yes, I agree, because I get couples, for example, who come in supposedly with a sex problem, and it's really a communication problem. They really need to communicate better.
Yeah.
And so in those cases, I have to do psychotherapy before I can do sex therapy.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yes. So Paul Yohannides, we were just talking about him, and the on your website, and I want everybody to make note of your website, Jamie, spelled Jamye, Waxman, Waxman.com. So it is, you can read his review of your 101 Positions for Lovers, and he says, finally, a how-to intercourse video that works. And he says it's hot and informative, unpretentious, and intercourse position inspiring. And he is, I know, he's very well respected in the field, and he's a tough critic, so to get such a positive review is something. And so anybody who wants to call in, it has to be the first caller, will get Jamie Waxman's DVD. Right, Jamie?
Absolutely.
Good. And I'm already thinking about Liz from last October, and I think she appreciated your book, Getting Off, A Woman's Guide to Masturbation. Before we talk about your book, I'm very interested in your workshops, and they are on your website as well. And you do some very provocative workshops. Can you kind of give us an overview and
what you especially like to do in your workshops? What are some of your favorites?
Well, my favorite workshops are, well, there's a couple. There's three, I would say, right now that are my favorites, but they mm-hmm. change all the time.
Yeah.
One is the oral sex workshop for him. Women really seem to enjoy being in a space where they can talk about what it is they, you know, their anxieties around going down on their partner, on spitting and swallowing and gagging, and just even to figure out if a lot of women who come to my workshops when they leave, although hopefully they are armed with a few takeaways, they often say, wow, I was so unsure that I was doing things right, and I feel good knowing now that I do well when I, you know, go down on my partner. So I love that, being able to give that positive affirmation to women and to arm them with some new tricks so that if you're in a long-term relationship and, you know, it's, you can't deny that you have to learn to change things up in order to keep it exciting, or unless it's just exciting for somebody to do the same thing, then it's fun to be able to give them new ideas. And even if the ideas that I provide aren't necessarily the ones that work, what happens for me when I'm teaching is if I go and experiment prior to teaching, I come up with new ideas each time.
Hey,
so,
good for you. And what we know is that sexual confidence is sort of an aphrodisiac.
Oh, it's so sexy, confidence. I mean, I think
so
that
sexy.
I talk about there are three things in this workshop. I call it the threes, the three E's, and that's eye contact, enthusiasm, and emoting. And
I love that.
Yeah, and, you know, those are all parts of being confident. You make eye contact with your partner. If you don't make eye contact, then, you know, you don't seem like you're present in any situation, whether it's oral sex or conversation or intercourse or kissing. If you can't make eye contact, then you're missing out on a very intense level of connection. I talk about enthusiasm when people ask me, what is the one tip to give a great blowjob? I feel bad when I think they're going to be upset if I don't say, well, twist and turn and this. It's really enthusiasm. If you don't want to be there, don't be there. And if you're there for reasons other than wanting to be there, then it translates into your relationship and your partner. So this is important as well. Like, you have to want to be there.
You have to want to be there, and the enthusiasm is really, really important. I think that one reason a lot of guys who aren't having really enthusiastic sex at home will turn to porn because the actresses are all very enthusiastic, and we know how it will end, but they're all just, you know, having a good time, and that is such a turn-on, to have fun, to be playful.
It's true. I mean, that's a huge, and the other thing, and that's another workshop I do love teaching is, right now I'm changing the name to Porn Star Sex Secrets, but really what we can, because we don't have the sex education tools, we're not armed with sex education tools as young adults and students, you know, we don't take a class on relationships and partnership and sexuality. Even if we have sex ed, the things we learn are either abstinence or safer sex or whatever, but it's not usually the whole host of sensual pleasure and health. And so with the porn star sex one, I look at what is our primary form of sex education these days, which is pornography for a lot of people, and dissect what can you take from this, like a woman's enthusiasm, or she dresses up for her partner. Even if you don't want to dress up for your partner every time, tell your partner, go in my closet and pick out an outfit, and I'll put it on for you.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So it makes it so you don't have to be, you can still be a little lazy, or you can say, I don't really want to think about it tonight, but it arms your partner then with the power. And if you don't like, I don't like wearing high heels, and that's a big part of a lot of pornography. So you get a pair of heels for home, and if they come out of your closet and they walk to your bed or the kitchen counter or the couch or wherever, and that's as far as they go before your legs are up in the air and you're kissing and whatever else, then that's fine. You're still wearing the heels. So if this visual turn-on is something for your partner, instead of saying, how could you? I'm not a porn star or whatever, say, how can't I? You know, there's an amazing, amazing 5-minute video clip of Dan Savage, and it's called The Price of Admission.
I've got to check, because I read him all the time. He owns a local paper here called The Stranger, and
yeah.
He has a column. I know it's nationally syndicated, but his columns are great.
His column is fantastic. This is a video. If you put in, say the name
online,
of
the video again.
If you Google Dan Savage, The Price of Admission,
it's a five-minute
video clip mm-hmm. about how instead of every time your partner forgets to put the sandwich makings, the mayonnaise away,
mm-hmm.
and you go and yell at him for not putting the mayonnaise away. If you put the mayonnaise away, not only do you avoid the yelling, but you also actually start to not be upset about it, because it's done and over in a much shorter amount of time. And so the whole idea around the price of admission are you can pick five things you can't live without, like changes. Like, you can't date a smoker. Okay, fine. Then that's one of your, if he smokes, that's you know, not okay. That's not part of the price of admission. But you pick
out. It's the deal breaker.
So you pick out five things that are deal breakers, and everything else you deal with, and everything else you try and represent your higher self. So if your partner says, "I like women in heels," and you are angry because you think that means he thinks you're a porn star or whatever, instead of that, you get a pair of heels and you wear them when you can.
I think that's great. Now, Your real sex versus porn sex, and you said you were changing the name, reminded me of Michael Castleman's book, Great Sex, A Man's Guide to the Secret Principles of Total Body Sex. And he's been on this show a couple of times. And in his book, he says, the simple secret of great sex, and he says this, stop trying to imitate what you see in pornography. The rushed mechanical sex that's entirely focused on the genitals. Instead, cultivate the opposite of porn, leisurely, playful, creative, whole-body, massage-based lovemaking that includes the genitals but is not obsessed with them. Good advice, don't you think?
Fantastic. In fact, I would even go a step further. I took a course last summer, a weekend course on sexuality, and one of the things the instructors had us do was a 30-minute erotic dance. We were all blindfolded.
Oh.
It could be whatever we wanted it to be. We were all clothed. And so for 30 minutes, I stood, basically not moving, and practicing squeezing and releasing my pelvic floor muscles.
Uh-huh.
And after 30 minutes, I was so aroused. I saw everything more clearly. My energy levels were up, I was horny, and I thought, God, it would be great with a partner to stop and start as well. And I mean, it could be for 5 minutes, or it could be for 5 hours, or it could be for, you know, an afternoon, whatever. But stopping and starting and prolonging the foreplay is such an amazing way to heighten sensual experience.
Absolutely. And, exhibitionism, show off.
Yeah.
Your mate, you know, go without underwear and maybe do a sexy dance. I think if you're dancing to music and maybe even doing a striptease, you can be aware, just as you described, of your own heightening arousal.
Yeah.
But then you also get to watch your partner and his eyes and maybe the way he's practically salivating for you.
And you could also show your partner moves that you might like, or techniques, you know, or how maybe if you even just move your hands up your legs, how slowly you do it, because your partner is very quick to get to the places that he or she wants to go. So
mm-hmm.
It's a great reminder on the various ways of touch and sensuality.
It's great. I had a question. I was looking at your website. And that is, again, for our listeners, jamiewaxman.com, J-A-M-Y-E, Waxman, W-A-X-M-A-N.com. So I had a question. One of your workshops is Uncovering the O. Female orgasm.
That's my third favorite, yes.
What?
I love that one, too.
Yeah, oh, well, I'm sure you get a lot of attendees. Uncovering the O, Female Orgasms, and More, More, More. And you have on your website what you'll learn by the end, the differences in orgasms between men and women. Can you expand on that or tell us?
Yeah, well, I mean, here's an interesting study that came out in 2007. It was mm-hmm. all about the way men and women have orgasms. Mm-hmm. I mean, first of all, women can have multiple orgasms, and guys can learn to, but it's
right.
not something as ingrained. It's not something innate. But one of the other big differences, and this one is fascinating to me, mm-hmm. is men just need physical touch. You touch, you stroke, you do what you need to do, and he can often have an orgasm. A woman, before she can even go to the physical place, she must be out of her brain. That is the most important element. She must be anxiety-free and stress-free and ready to relax and be in the moment. If she has things running through her brain, if she's feeling anxious or worried about performance, then the idea of her even having an orgasm is not there. And the other thing is, and this is part of, again, the porn workshop, too, overlapping. Men see women in porn have vaginal orgasms, one, and two, have very immediate vaginal orgasms. One, most women don't have orgasms through penetration alone. And
right.
two, most of us take a lot longer than you see in porn to have that orgasm.
Yeah, the average time, I've read this in studies, that it's between 15 and 20 minutes.
Yeah,
the average time for a woman to be aroused.
Exactly, and a guy is between 3 and 5.
Yeah, so that's a big difference. But what happens physiologically, and I mentioned this to a couple I was seeing recently, and she's had all sorts of, you know, pain with intercourse and that sort of thing. And she's never had a doctor, an MD, explain this to her. But what happens when a woman is aroused, sufficiently aroused, and signals that she's ready for penetration is that the entrance to her vagina thickens, the top part balloons out a bit, tense out a bit. But here's the most important thing. Her uterus, which is above the cervix, lifts up and away.
Mm-hmm.
And if that hasn't happened, the penis can hit the cervix, and then the uterus, and then you have more pain. And that's in the doggy style position for intercourse, that's especially evident. I mean, it can come up. The woman can feel pain if she's not sufficiently aroused because her uterus hasn't lifted away.
Right, absolutely. I mean, there are a lot of reasons, you know, women can feel pain too. If they're not lubricated enough is another, which when I was talking with a couple the other night, I was over at Spice Radio and we were talking and he said, I'm very large and my wife bleeds and I can't have intercourse with her.
Mm.
And first of all, I think when anyone's telling you they're very large from the get-go, that might not be the case. Number two, it's not important either here nor there, but number two is, I said, do you use lubrication? No. Well,
that's a huge problem. My. No,
especially,
sure.
And she was past menopause, and especially,
uh-huh.
you know, I can only speak from my body, and I still lubricate well, but I've talked with lots of women past menopause who stopped lubricating around menopause naturally, or it just changed, and they required...
lubrication is essential.
Exactly.
I mean, using a lube is so, so important. And then what happens, as you know, not personally, but I know... I don't know it either because I'm taking care of myself. But post-menopause, many women have vaginal walls that start to thin.
They atrophy, absolutely,
yeah.
Because the vagina, too, is a muscle, and we have to figure out how to take care of it, exercise it as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, part of it is hormonal as well, but
right.
there's that other part of it, too.
Yes. So let me remind the listening audience that if you have a question for Jamie Waxman, and you can ask Jamie anything. I mean, we've been on the air for almost 25 minutes, and you can tell she's very open. She's very knowledgeable. And I think after the break, we'll talk a little more about her book, Getting Off, A Woman's Guide to Masturbation, because it's with a foreword by Betty Dodson, who's also been on this program. I love the field that I'm in because I know all of you very interesting people.
Thank you.
So I have a guest list that's really kind of juicy and interesting. So anyway, if any of you want to receive Jamie Waxman's video, DVD, And it's called 101 Positions for Lovers. If you're the first caller and you have a question for Jamie, you're going to get that, that she's so generously offered to send it. So, I just mentioned Betty Dodson. Why don't you, we talked a little bit about Candida Royale and what an influence she's been. But Betty Dodson, who did the foreword to your book, has had such an influence, too, for you. Would you share with us about that?
Sure. Well, Candida, like, she did lead me into making erotic movies and believed enough in me to get me to Adam and Eve and all of that. Betty, on the other hand, my first experiences were with Betty through her videos. I was working at Babeland, a sex shop in New York, in my early 20s, and I had never actually looked at my vulva. And I went home one day with Viva La Vulva, one of Betty's movies, where the women all sit around and look at themselves in mirrors. And I was really inspired from that. So I watched myself in the mirror, watched my lips engorge, because that's really fascinating, too. You were talking about the vagina balloons up. But also, we have as much erectile tissue as guys do. It just is laid out differently. And when you are aroused and you get engorged, the lips get fuller and thicker, and it's really quite something. So I got very inspired. And then I got to meet Betty. I'm trying to think what that first time was. It might have been on my radio show or the show I was producing. But I, in 2003, took a... I was one of the women who masturbated for her on camera for
that
Orgasmic
took courage,
Divas.
Didn't it?
Yeah, and
you
it
took
was,
down your pants for her.
I did, and she took down her pants for me, too.
I know.
It was a very fun day.
And there were several other women at the time?
Actually, I was the first one they shot, and we were shooting. The only other people in the room were the two, Marie and Jack of Libido Films, and Betty's boyfriend at the time, Eric. And the best part for me of the story, because I'm a, most of the time, I love masturbation, but I'm a fairly boring masturbator. I have my way. I do it. I get it done. Betty did not want me to use toys.
Ah.
So I had gone weeks without practicing with toys, and had built myself up. I wanted to be able to have an orgasm on camera. And
boy, you are a really bold and brave woman.
And so when it was done, Eric turned to me and said, I can teach you how to do it better. And I thought, I want to kill you. That is so obnoxious.
Ah.
I mean, there's that part that's, as an educator, I'm also a student, and so there's that part of me that wants to learn, of course. But I thought, wow, I just had a great orgasm. I just did this on camera for you and Betty, and this is the first thing you tell me.
Of course, the other interesting fact is that Eric is about 40 years younger than Betty.
Yes. Exactly.
At the time, he must have been in his late 20s.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but of course, he was getting a lot of mentoring from Betty, and
yes.
You ultimately did too.
Yeah. Mentoring. I mean, he spent a lot more time with her than I did.
Yeah.
But
intimate time.
But I did get, and I was at Betty's 77th birthday.
Uh-huh.
That was lovely, and she's just, you know, she has such powerful friends in New York, including Leonore Tiefer, who is so smart and intimidates me to no end. But she has this whole idea, which is something I really love and listen to, is that sex is not natural. And I really love hearing her speak on that, because all the magazines will tell you sex is natural, sex is easy, it should, you know, it's going to be easy for you to do it this way. And then people get into the, well, what's wrong with me? It doesn't feel natural. I don't understand why we're having such a difficult time relating if sex is supposed to be easy. And she really has this whole thing on it's not supposed to be easy. It's work.
Well, Leonore Tiefer is very controversial in lots of ways, and she doesn't believe in sexual medicine. I met her in Boston at the first female sexual dysfunction conference that the Berman sisters were together at that time, put on in 1999 in Boston. And then I met her in 2001. We sat together at the same table for the World Congress for Sexology. She is a smart, provocative woman. I don't always agree with her, but she's fascinating.
Absolutely.
And Yeah. So guess what? We've come up to the half-hour break, and we'll go away and then come back, and we're going to talk about Jamie Waxman's book, Getting Off, A Woman's Guide to Masturbation. We've already touched on certain aspects of it, but we'll get into it even more, so please stay with us.
You're listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Hey, did you miss your favorite show? Don't worry, PRN has you covered. Just log on to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and go to the archive page where you can choose from any of our great programs. Listen or download shows from yesterday or even ones dating months back. The Progressive Radio Network, striving to make your lives easier.
Every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN, I'll be revealing secrets, deceptions, and hoaxes of the medical cartel. I've been covering this waterfront for 30 years as a reporter, and I know where the bodies are buried. With guests and commentary, I'll rip open the lid on vaccines, psychiatric drugs, the FDA, pharmaceutical companies, germ research, and media cover-ups. Don't check your brain at the door. Tune it up. Every Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern on PRN, The John Rappaport Show.
Why should you be listening to the Progressive Radio Network? Here are a few hosts that call PRN home. Award-winning investigative journalist and documentary filmmaker Michael Rupert. Acclaimed theoretical physicist Michio Kaku. Notable media critic and international journalist, the news dissector, Danny Schechter. Leading progressive journalists such as Stephen Ledman, John Rappaport, and Glenn Ford have also found a home with us. We also have advice from Richard Martin on how to protect yourself from the ongoing financial collapse. John Mueller tells us his firsthand account on moving out of the U.S. and making a new life for himself in another country on his show, The Expat Files. Along with all these informative programs, we also have health shows hosted by America's top doctors like Mayor Eisenstein, Cheryl Selman, and, of course, Gary Null. The Progressive Radio Network is the place for news and information.
Rachel Trachtenberg for Rachel Trachtenberg's Pure Imagination. This is a show for everyone from our perspective as teens. Current events, art is life, music, and politics. Rachel Trachtenberg's Pure Imagination with co-host Julia Cunning. Wednesdays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Not bad.
Not too shabby.
Progressive Radio Network is proud to bring you the most up-to-date, cutting-edge commentaries 24 hours a day and 7 days a week.
The Wiley and Sage Show with
Lust and Laughter. And I'm without my beloved co-host this week because he's sick. Billy Sage is sick, so think positive thoughts for him. And if you've just tuned in, you'll want to know that I'm with my friend and colleague, Jamie Waxman. And she is an extraordinary woman. You have this award-winning book, Getting Off, A Woman's Guide to Masturbation, which was published in 2007. Is that right?
Yes.
But you have a new book. Would you tell us about the new book?
The new book is called Hot Sex, Over 200 Things You Can Try Tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I've co-written it with a woman named Emily Morse, who does her own radio show called Sex with Emily. And it's what I love the most about the book is it's less words, more pictures, and they're beautiful photos. They're actual photos that are then drawn over. It's called rotoscoping, and if you've ever seen Waking Life or Scanner Darkly or any of those movies, those are both Richard Linklater films, then you know what I'm talking about. And it's, I think, a really accessible way for people to look at sex, because you can look and see that they are real people, but they also are enough removed from looking like real people to understand that you don't have to judge them as real people. We often, we just judge. I should own it, but I try hard not to judge, but I think society and women in general are often judging everything when you first see a picture or, you know, looking at another woman like, oh, are her thighs bigger than mine? Are her eyes bigger? What are her boobs? Whatever. So with this, it takes it out of the element of reality, but leaves a little reality in.
Nicely expressed. And you, you have your current book, and I really like your introduction that says, masturbation. How can one simple word be so complex? And you explain that very well, but it really is complex.
Well, it's interesting, too, because masturbation was the first sexual act to be medicalized, and that happened in the 1700s when a quack doctor, whose name was recently learned by Thomas Lecker, but it's slipping my mind, when he published his own pamphlet called Onania, or The Heinous Sin of Self-Pollution and All Its Frightful Consequences in Both Sexes Considered, and then it went on and on and on. And it was, A, the first time onan was used, a term from the Bible, which was about withdrawal. It was not about masturbation. It was about spilling seed. It was the first time the term onan was associated with masturbation. And also, he put these pamphlets in coffee shops and then would promise if you were to go into the coffee shop and deposit your coins, you would come back and you would receive a tincture. So the tincture would cure you from dying a very painful and slow but young death from masturbation.
Oh, my. That's so interesting. And your book also gives, it's not just a guidebook, but it is filled with these social, cultural, historical perspectives, as you just described.
And, you know, I emcee an event sometimes called Mindshare LA, which is like a TED Talks here in Los Angeles. And Mindshare had me speak on masturbation in February, so I did some more research. And, you know, where we think we've come so far, it's 2011, we're progressive. Last year there was a young star of Gossip Girl, Taylor Momsen, who went online and was quoted as saying, I prefer, she was like 16 or 17, I'm more into learning and using a sex toy than I am in having sex with a boy. And the internet went in an uproar on the fact that she was talking about masturbation. Pee Wee Herman, who, Paul Rubens, who was found in 2001 in a movie theater in Florida with his hands down his pants, went on record in 2010 in a Playboy interview and said, I can prove via Masters and Johnson, famous sex therapists, I can prove via their research that it was not me masturbating in that movie theater. Masters and Johnson's say you masturbate with your dominant hand. I was caught masturbating with my left hand, and I'm a righty, so it wasn't me. And, I mean, the fact that he 10 years later is coming out and trying to make up this excuse, it wasn't me, it's not the right hand, is amazing, you know?
It is amazing. And it's also amazing that this Gossip Girl young woman, I mean, that's the safest thing she can do. It's uncomplicated, and she's not ready to apparently be with a young man. It's the best thing she can do, which is to get acquainted with a sex toy and get acquainted with her body.
Exactly.
With herself.
Exactly.
And,
so,
well, Jocelyn Lynn Elders got fired.
Right, and
during
people forget
Clinton
it was Bill Clinton, exactly. It wasn't Bush, it was Clinton. And Clinton's reasoning when he fired Jocelyn Elders a week after at the United Nations Councils on AIDS when she was asked, do you think masturbation should be taught as part of a sex ed curriculum? And she said, yes, I think masturbation should be taught as part of a sex ed curriculum. Bill Clinton said that her views were not in line with the public, with the policy of the White House. And then
he was forced to do that.
Of course, of course.
Because he knows better. Yeah. So it's a very complicated thing, but I know from 11 years of co-leading two women's sexuality groups, and all of these women had sexual trauma in their backgrounds, and they mostly, when they came to the groups, they were not having orgasms, and that's fairly common for women who've had sexual abuse. That, you know, the best homework assignments we could give these women was to masturbate, to go home and to masturbate and to spend some time doing it. And we had a few, I remember one woman was a real successful professional woman, and she actually was able to reach orgasm with a sex toy, a vibrator, but we asked her to do it with her fingers, and that took her an hour, and she didn't like that at all. But most women who have not had orgasms by the time they're, say, in their late 20s and beyond, will need a vibration, a sex toy. And what Jennifer Berman, when I was at UCLA, discovered is that probably the nerve pathways between the genitals and the brain are not laid down if a woman hasn't masturbated as a teenager or in her early 20s. And I remember having a patient at UCLA, the only way Catholic, and she was taught not to touch down there. So as a teenager, she learned to reach orgasm by lying on her stomach, rocking on a carpet. But
that's very common.
I know it was look, ma, no hands, but it's not partner compatible.
No, and even, you know, the vibrator thing, it's a big question. Will I be desensitized from my partner if I use the vibrator? And the truth is, you will have a harder time reaching orgasm other ways if you are continuously using vibration. Mm-hmm. But if you stop, like I did when I was masturbating for Betty, you can regain the sensation. It's not lost. It's just retraining. And I was sexually active for over 5 years prior to having an orgasm. And I did achieve my first orgasm at the age of 21 thanks to a vibrator.
And you talk about that in your book. And
yes.
You also address the thing you just talked about, the vibrator curse.
Yes.
On page 81, the ugly rumor has been making the rounds. One that claims that too much vibration causes a clit to go numb and never, ever find its original sensitivity again. And we know better.
And, I mean, Debbie Herbenick out of the Kinsey Institute did a study a few years ago on vibrators. And there were 17% of women who reported some pain and discomfort around using vibration, but in all cases in her study, the women, when they discontinued vibrator use, were fine.
Yes. Yes. And but usually the women, in my experience, need that, is it 300 mph? faster than a tongue or a finger can go. They need that extra stimulation on their clitoris. And we all need to remember that the clit has 8,000 nerve fibers, more or less, and the penis has 4,000. And the only purpose for the clitoris is pleasure.
Yes.
And aren't we lucky as women?
And it's exciting. And even Rebecca Chalker, who wrote a fantastic book called The Clitoral Truth, I was discussing this with her not too long ago, and she believes now that there may even be more nerve endings than 6,000 to 8,000.
Really?
She believes there may be up to 12,000, which just makes
Boy.
Right. Right.
That's
as
exciting.
If we didn't have enough.
Well, of course, that would be hard to prove, but I suppose if somebody wanted to do, well, let's not go there. I'm thinking a cadaver exam, but You also talk in your book, there's so many good things in your book, and you, what? Well, let's backpedal a little bit, because what got you interested in all of this, in terms of your personal history, Jamie, is that you worked at Babe Land for how long in New York City?
I worked there on and off for about 8 years.
8 years. See, that's a long time.
It was 5 years, I would say, of really working.
Okay. And you loved sharing, and you were comfortable sharing.
Well, yeah, it started even really actually in radio, because my first love was radio. And
mm-hmm.
When I started working with Bob Berkowitz on Love Bites, which was on IATA, we were interviewing people like you. I know you were a guest.
Yeah. In 2001.
We were interviewing people like you three times a day. Five days a week.
Mm-hmm.
So I had been a radio producer, and I actually went back to radio producing after that show ended for a while. But mm-hmm. the idea of doing a comedy show or, you know, a variety show or a political show even didn't feel as satisfying
mm-hmm.
as
mm-hmm.
doing a show where people could talk about their sexuality and their sensuality and their sex lives and their pleasure and their health, because these are things that are important to talk about and also not being talked about a lot. And I don't know if it's the case with you, Diana, but with me, I take for granted that I'm comfortable in an industry where I can be open and talk about anything, and I don't feel shame or guilt around pleasure. But most people I talk to, that's not the case.
And of course, for you as a sex educator, and for me as also a sex educator and therapist, it's essential to feel comfortable and non-judgmental, because you cannot be effective in doing this work if you've got judgments or you've got anxiety. You know, you've got to feel, the starting point really is to feel comfortable with your own sexuality.
And I would just add to that, in my master's program, that you actually struck a chord, because there was a class, I won't go into what we were learning, but it was more controversial fetishy sexuality.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the girls in my class raised her hand at one point and said, if I had a patient who presented with this, I would tell them to leave my office, that they had problems and they needed help, and I would not be their help. And I was the only one in my class at the time who stood up to her, and I said, I think you're in the wrong profession. I think that you should go and do something else, some other form of social work or whatever, because, you know, people in this field, we need people who can give, if it's not permission, who can at least give give people the idea that what they're doing is okay, you know, and not make them feel, even if it's consensual, sane, and safe, not make them feel as if they have, you know, really messed up your own value system. Look, we all have hot buttons. There's no doubt about it. What are your hot buttons? What are your issues? You might have a tag team, so you can pass that off as a sex educator to someone else, but you can't let your hot buttons and your issues affect how you talk with others about their sexuality.
No, you can't, and it's essential, I think, to be fairly well balanced and, as I said earlier, comfortable with your own sexuality as a sex educator or therapist. And or it would not be helpful if I had people come in and describe a fetish to me and I would say, you do what? That's not helpful.
Exactly.
So one reason that sex therapists are given the SAR trainings is, and that's, what is that?
Sexual attitude reassessment.
Thank you very much. Is that we're exposed to all sorts of things. And I've been in this field for 28 years, and in the SAR training, you see films, you hear all sorts of things, because you want to actually know more about fetish behavior or this or that, so that you're not shocked.
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, the thing is that we all, this is why the term sexpert, I try and own it, but I have a very hard time with it, because we all are experts in our own sex life where we're at right now. We know what we know. We know there's a lot we don't know. There's a lot I don't know. And the only way we learn is to be open to experimenting or conversation or whatever. But that we're all experts as far as we've gone. And that's and the only way to continue is to share, is to watch videos or talk with other people or talk with your partner. But until you are being doing that, then you are limiting the level that you can take this to.
Very well said, and so many people become more comfortable and wiser as they age, and I mean, you're a youngin', but you're already quite wise.
Thank you.
And on your website, you have a wonderful page called Hot Monogamy, and Sexpert, speaking of Sexpert, Jamie Waxman offers 7 amazing ways to pump up the passion. And again, listening audience, go to her website, Jamie Waxman, J-A-M-Y-E, Waxman, W-A-X-M-A-N, .com, and you can read this for yourself. These are kinds of tips that I give a lot of my couples, but I like it so much. Schedule sex.
I mean, that's another thing. Immediately, people are thinking, if I have to schedule sex, then it's not worth doing. It should be spontaneous. But you schedule your kids' basketball games. You schedule your dates. You schedule lunches and dinners. And you schedule work meetings. So why wouldn't you schedule sex?
And especially when people are as busy as they are, I talk about TTFS, which is too tired for sex, and DINS syndrome, double income, no sex. You got to put sex on the calendar.
Yeah, and even, you know, Joan Price, who I know you said you had on your show a few weeks ago, she gives wonderful advice,
too.
Even if you're not in the mood, do it.
Do it. Yeah, absolutely do it.
Because
lots of women, desire does not precede arousal. You've got to start to do it, start to get aroused, and then the desire may kick in. But scheduling sex is really important. And there seems to be this, a lingering notion that the good sex is only spontaneous sex. And in this busy, busy time of our lives, this is not true.
No, not true at all.
And then you say, play dress up. Buy a wig.
Wigs, you know, it's funny. I mean, it's the one word. If people say to me, what can I do to change up the sex I'm having with my partner? One of the first things I think of is buy a wig. If you've ever put a wig on, you know you become the person that is under that wig, but that wig is a big part of the person you become. So get a wig that's just totally out of character and see where that takes you and what it does for you.
Barbie Benton, who's been on this program a couple of times, and also when I lived in Hawaii, and so did she on the program there, she talked about getting a wig and having different wigs and changing it up. And, of course, Barbie was Hugh Hefner's girlfriend 30 years ago, so she knows the sexual scene.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I mean, even if you just, before you do it for sex, if you just put it on and go out for a day, you'll walk a little different.
Mm-hmm.
You'll talk a little different, you know, because it's kind of like a mask. It is like a mask. I will take out the kind of. It is like a mask. It allows you
to,
yeah, it allows you to be a little different. You know, it alters the experience of how people see you.
Well, I think something aligned with that is that you meet your regular partner at a bar, restaurant, and you take on totally different identities.
Yes.
And you play it out all the way. That can be a lot of fun, particularly for people who've been together for a while.
I think it's even fun, depending on, of course, sizes here, but dressing up in each other's clothes. So you just switch roles. Esther Perel in Mating in Captivity has another piece of interest, I think, interesting advice. Pay your wife, pay your husband for sex.
Ah, yes. Well, money is a motivator, even for people dieting, apparently.
But, you know, there was a whole thing. She was seeing a patient, she wrote in her book, that said, I can't ask the mother of my children for a blowjob. It just feels wrong. So she said, give her $20 and don't, you know, so you're not asking, you're paying her, and see how that feels.
Yeah, you know, there's an old joke about this Jewish couple that they married, and there's a Yiddish term called a knippel, which is like a little payment for sex, and goes under the pillow. So this couple, she said, Rosie said, sex will be a little more exciting if you do this. And so he did it, and he got more and more successful. And over the years, they lived in New York City. And so sometimes he'd put a $100 bill under the pillow, but he was faithful about it. And they had good sex. And so one day she comes home. They have this great penthouse apartment, floor-to-ceiling glass, and he's so distraught, and he looks like he's about to commit suicide. He wants to run out the window, and she says, "Now wait! What's going on?" And I'll spare you the Jewish accent because that. And anyway, he says, "You know, I've lost everything." And then she says, "No, wait. Look out there. You know, that building, we own it. And then look at that one. We own that one, too." And he just looks at her incredulously, and he says, "How can that be?" She says, "Well, remember all those knipples, all the payments for sex." And then he starts to run again to commit suicide out the window. And she pulls him back. And she says, "Now what?" And he says, "Had I known, I would have brought you all my business." You get it? It's a very old joke. But yeah, so payment for sex, it can be okay.
Yes.
And then you say go out on a date. This is so important. I suggest to my couples all the time that they've got to do that.
Go out on dates and honestly get your kids out of the house. I had a friend who told me she was in a very progressive family, and her mom would just say, "Look, your dad and I need some alone time. Here's $10. Go to the movies."
Ah, good. I like that. That is progressive.
Yeah.
Most parents couldn't do that.
But that doesn't, when you say alone time to a kid, they don't necessarily, I mean, if I was a 10-year-old kid and my parents said we're going to have some alone time, I don't know that I would have jumped at the sex conclusion.
Mm.
I think as adult, I mean, maybe, and maybe now with the internet being what it is and it being easy to look anything up, maybe it would be different. Maybe I was just a naive child, but I wouldn't even want to think about it, most likely.
Mm-hmm. Then you also say with hot monogamy on your website, jamiewaxman.com, try something new. I like it that you say this, experiment with prostate massage.
Yes.
Because that can feel really good to a man.
It can, and you don't need to stick something far up the bum the first time you experiment, even though you will need to get to the prostate.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to wait to get there, but a lot more guys like stimulation behind the penis. If they were to try it, they would know what I'm talking about.
Exactly, and because we're getting short on time, let's go through a couple of other points here. Write naughty notes. Oh, what fun.
Yes, and there was just a New York Times article that women are more likely to sext than men are.
Aha! Uh-huh. I didn't know that.
It just came out today, I think.
Wow. And then you say, show your love. Remind your partner how much you love them on a regular basis. I have found, Jamie, over the years of doing lots of, seeing thousands of couples for marital counseling, that many relationships die from emotional undernourishment. They start to take each other for granted. They don't say, this is what I value and appreciate about you. So oftentimes at the end of a session, I'll get the couple to sit knee to knee, holding hands, eye contact, and say sweet nothings to each other. They take turns, 2 minutes each, what they
That's
really
lovely.
Value and appreciate about each other. And I've had many couples, just one yesterday, they start to cry, including my men.
Because I love to hear these positive expressions.
And also, you know, I met this couple in, at the Sex Toy Expo I was just at, and they made a board game called Monogamy, a Hot Affair. And in it, they have some of the questions are about tell your partner, remember the first date. What was that like for you?
Yeah.
You know, so go back to places that are distant memories, but bring them back to the present.
And those memories can be such a turn-on. Jamie, you have been a delightful guest. I want to have you back for another part two in 2010. We'll talk about that later. Next week, I want... So thank you, Jamie.
Thank you.
Next week, tune in for Joan Price, part two. She was on a... Yeah, she was on a couple of weeks ago. So... We'll be back, and thank you for tuning in to Love, Lust, and Laughter. This is Dr. Diana Wiley signing off. Bye-bye.